Oh, hello, friends, and welcome back to I'm Not Supposed to Be Here.
I'm not supposed to be here.
I haven't done that that long.
And if this is your first time, then welcome. I am your host, Trent L. Dixon.
Yeah.
I'm sitting next to the lovely and talented
Eclectic Sage, aka Christian, you know me.
And today, we have longtime listener, first time caller. My man, hey, what's going on, Abe?
How's it going?
I didn't know you were a long time listener. That's so fire.
Yeah, he told me, and I've always been listening since then.
Oh, that's fire. Oh, so you know more about me than shit. I'm over here. Mind you, I'm having like a chat with this man, like just having like just New York centered like conversations, and then I didn't know I had a
subway conversation. You just met a stranger.
Yeah, like I'm just like, hey, I'm being cordial. It's like, I know your deepest thoughts. I know your thoughts on AI.
And nah, how's everybody feeling tonight?
I'm feeling so good.
Doing good.
How was the commute?
No complaints. I'm in a hopeful state. Oh.
Go for it. Let's hear it.
I'm trying to give the MTA some grace. For once.
Because I take the Metro North. It has to be a specific time.
Wow.
So I missed my first train to try to get here, but I made it.
You made it. Oh.
You got here before me, too. Oh.
I thought you were going to say something crazy like I had to wrestle a crackhead to get
here. No, the MTA. They punch your ticket holes or whatever. There's an actual conductor that says hi to you. The discrepancy between the MTA and the Metro North is like, I don't know what. How much you pay? It's like $10 a ride or something.
Well, I get the monthly, so yeah. My monthly is $221 a month.
Okay. Yeah. That's not bad. Okay, yeah. In comparison, like $138 is like the monthly for an MTA ticket. So, you know, you pay like $50 more. You don't have to like wrestle and fight. Like, don't have to get beat up. Don't have to see like the strangest thing you've ever seen in your life and carry on.
Actual bathroom in the train.
Oh wow, that's fancy.
You never rode the Metro North. Once you ride it once, you're just like, whoa.
How have I been living like this?
Yeah, it's like when you go from like a bachelor apartment with like the roaches, and then just like, and then you just have an apartment with like a good window. Yeah. You're like, whoa. I didn't need roaches. Those weren't a feature of the apartment.
Wow. That's crazy. Now, the other day, where was I going? I don't remember where I was going. So this guy, he gets on the train.
Was it the two trade?
Yes, it was the two trade. So obviously he's a boxer, right? He's got this gigantic backpack on. I guess it's like got all his gear, and his boxing gloves are hanging, you know, from his backpack. Yeah. So, you know, he's got this bike with him. He ties up his bike. Cool. Normal stuff. He sits down. He's real fidgety. He gets up, goes outside the train. You know, between cars, start smoking crack.
Oh my God.
Then he comes back in like he's ready for a fight. Like he's all energized.
He brought the gloves.
I'm like, yo, that's wild.
Yeah, wrong type of hits, but she's. He got one in.
I mean, you know, whatever moves you.
Wow.
We listen and we don't judge. We observe and we don't judge.
I love them. They always backfire too.
Yes, always.
They always backfire.
This is my first time seeing you this year. You too, Abe.
Yeah.
I think it was
yesterday.
This year.
Yesterday.
Of the new year.
Yesterday.
I saw you last year.
Yeah.
Was it?
Off the train, yeah. That was last year. I thought it was this year.
Nah, it's yeah.
I thought, were you at the photo walk?
Nah, he wasn't.
Oh, okay. I looked at one of the photos. I thought you were in one of them.
Who looks like me in that photo?
I don't know. Let me pull up the photo.
Let's
maybe I photoshopped you in my head. Even though I didn't know you yet.
Let me see.
Or maybe somebody was wearing a similar shirt than what you're wearing right now.
Maybe. I don't know. Who would look like Abe?
It's the one that's on. Shout out to Quay.
Yeah, shout out to Quay.
Also, shout out to the photo.
What is up with Quay? I haven't seen him in a while.
Oh, he's doing well. Not to put all his business out on the pod, but you know, he's been filming.
Oh, that's good.
You know, still working at the place we work at.
Oh no,
that's good.
You know, so yeah, nah, he's doing really good. Like he's he actually just started casting. No, no, he finished casting for his next movie. So wow. They're getting ready to start pre-production on that.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, Shadows yeah Quaid, you know, it's Quaid. He's always moving, always doing something.
I didn't even know he even had a movie out.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of movies. Wow. He normally does like short features, but he's won awards and things like that for it. So yeah,
wow. Amazing.
Yeah, so Quaid's
always. We should bring him on the pod.
Yeah. No, he is. Remember, because we're going to do
We're going to do a crossover.
The crossover episode with his podcast. So.
Little Timmy, yeah. Timmy Jimmy action.
Yeah, that'll be.
if you guys, that dates me. But that when that happened on Nickelodeon, that was the coolest thing ever. Like, mind-boggling. Shout out to the writers of that. But when they had Fairy Oddparents and Jimmy Neutron, like, just fuse and do that one episode, and they did it two times when they went to each other's worlds, yo.
I'm dating myself, but I've
never, seen it.
I've heard. I'm aware.
I'm gonna send
of
it
Fairly
to you.
Odd Parents.
I'm gonna send it. It's W writing. Yeah. For a little kid, what? It's like mind boggling.
Mind boggling. Like, I didn't know they could do this.
Yeah.
Do you know what he's talking about? Hey?
Nah. Hey, shout out to Jules because he's gonna hear this. He's gonna be like, yo. Gonna have a brain blast. Yeah, all right,
we should have brought Jules on, but it's all good. But no, how's everybody's year been so far?
So far, so good.
Awesome. What's your favorite thing about this year so far? At least coming in, we're only like a couple days in.
Yeah,
I'm a grandfather.
Hey, wow, that's congratulations! Amazing. That's amazing.
This and the second one is coming.
Whoa, that's what's up. Boy, girl, do we know?
We do not know yet.
Okay, no. Okay. Still waiting for are you hoping for something?
My daughter wants the girl. Her fiance wants another boy.
Yeah,
there's already a boy.
But Abe wants.
Abe doesn't care.
Abe is just once you get Abe, to. I feel like once you get to grandpa level, you're just like, yeah. I just want. I love them all. I love them.
That's what's up. What about you?
I'm happy. I had a moment where I was like crying in hope yesterday, and I was like, wow, how profound. I'm just for the audience. I just finished college. Hey, I just graduated. And I remember I was re-listening to the episode Gratitude, and it was talking about like my goals, and finishing college was one of them, and a couple other things were on there too. And I think I hit most of them. So I was just like, you know what? What is there to like really stress about? Like, I really did that, and I feel so happy. I could tear up right now. I'm still processing finishing college. Mind you, I've been doing college for like 5 years. I had to stop semesters and like work two jobs, pay for it by myself out of pocket, and do it while living in New York City. And I did it, and it was a private institution, and I did it, and I left with legacy. I dropped an album in between there.
Yes.
And I'm ready to like really go out into the world and do more. So I'm just so happy. I'm so profoundly happy. And I have we made a podcast in the middle of college. Like, and I just want to carry that light forward and spare that good energy for the year and just, you know, share that happiness for people.
Yeah, kudos to you, because it's hard enough living in New York City, but to pay for school too, yeah, amongst the you know all the BS you told me you had to deal with from the school.
That's so much, and you know what? It made me the person that I am today to persevere and go through that. And I would do it all again because I know this feeling currently is just so worth it. Such a nice, hopeful feeling. I get to talk to my friends, and they feel it too. I feel like this year is going to be a beautiful year. So.
Nice. Now you got a bunch of time on your hands.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I just started.
More podcasts.
Yes. It was so funny. So I went to go visit my mom, who lives in Florida, and I came back up, and then I landed, and I was just like, "Where are my friends at? Like, where are you guys at?" And then I was just like, "I have so much extra time," and I was having like a little mini existential crisis for like 4 days, and I was like, "I was like, what is all this time? You mean school took up all this time?" Yeah. But now I'm amongst the regular folk.
You're one of us now.
Yeah, oh my god! You know what's the scariest thing to look at on LinkedIn? Yeah, I was like, oh no. I was like, I'm fading into obscurity. I'm becoming corporate. I'm becoming corporate.
Now you gotta get out there and be somebody. What am I?
I saw Ryan Reynolds had a LinkedIn, and I was just like, and it gets all of us. It gets out. Yes. I was like, it gets all. It's everybody. Every person.
The question is, when was the last time he updated it? Because I mean,
shout out to Mint Mobile. Hey, put me in front of that green screen.
Costs you nothing. Does anybody have any like specific goals they want to accomplish this year?
So for me, I don't make goals. Like I don't make a New Year resolution.
Yeah. Oh, they're excited about shouts
out to them. We had like a real life Wolfhog in the background.
Yeah. But nah, you don't make goals.
I don't make the goals. I just live day by day and live by the experience that I have. Mm. So that's how I move in life.
Yeah, that's fire. No, what about you?
So I don't have goals. Similar kind of to you, I have me and my friend, and I might have said this on the gratitude episode.
You definitely did. I was going to bring it up.
Yeah, but we have intentions.
Yes.
And sort of the purpose. What's up?
I said, I love it. I have my intentions. Like, yeah. I started making my own intentions because of it.
And I mean, the intentions expand beyond, you know, just the year, because we should always be working on something. But, you know, the year is always the end of year, beginning of year is always a good marker to take a step back and look at, you know, okay, I need to be working on this. I have been working on this. How do I progress? You know, what's the next step? So, yeah, I've got a few things. I think I got a list. Let me see if I can find that.
That's
list.
Fire.
But you can go while I'm looking for
my list. Yeah, oh, my God. I was just so happy. I was re-listening to that episode, and I was just like, I really love the idea of intentions, because even when I was listening back and there were some things that, like, were missed, I didn't feel, like, with a resolution, you feel bad when you don't hit it. But, like, with an intention, it's just like, you know, intentions are a lot more lenient and wholesome, and they feel a little bit less, more
rigid.
Yeah, less rigid, and it's just what you want to pay attention to.
Yeah,
and absolutely. it's not like a thing where you have to necessarily go and have a complete finesse about what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, I put attention to it, and I did put attention to it. It may not have got as far as I thought, but I still have time. And it's a lot less of a kind of a cloud over your head.
Yeah,
for the year.
Less of a pressure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You make better decisions off of it too when you just have intentions, as opposed to like I'm resolute. Even though the nature of the word is more, it's too strong for, you know, something that's unforeseen and unknown.
And no pun, but that was intentional. You know, no pun intended.
I think that's a fire concept. I'm gonna start putting in music and try to spread the word on that, because that's really fire. Yeah, fuck a resolution. We love on our intentions. It's all about intentions.
No, so I'm also supposed to make a bingo card. And Batman, if you're listening, I have not thought about the bingo card, but I'm off tomorrow. So I'm going to clean out my PS5 and then I'm going to make my bingo card. But I'll just throw out some of the first one is figure this shit out, which is always a goal.
We love
always.
That.
Second one, work on those secret projects. Some I've told you about.
Yes.
So those are getting way more meat on the bones, which I love. Let's see, video for the podcast. Yes, you will be seeing us soon. Japan. I have to make it to Japan this year.
You're still with Japan.
Oh, yeah.
No, we definitely have to go.
There was a lot of bumps last year. I had to let it go for last year.
That was one of the gratitude episodes, and I was just like, you know what? We're going to make that happen this year.
Yeah, yeah.
So. One of the first things when I met Trent, was I'm going to Japan.
Yay. Oh my God. We're gonna go multiple times. So you gotta brush up on your Japanese.
Instead I went to Iceland. But I don't regret Iceland that year. That was perfect.
Iceland was so beautiful. It was
the closest to perfect.
I use your story of Iceland a lot.
What's up?
When I speak to people about Iceland and Greenland, because you know now that the political sphere is actually changing, and somebody wants to buy Greenland.
Wait, I didn't hear about this. Someone wants to buy Greenland?
Yeah, you didn't hear about it? We could mention who wants to do this.
If you want, I can bleep it out.
Oh, yeah,
you know, I love the bleeps.
So it was he wants to buy Greenland so that the... Sure. don't start something up there.
So okay, all right.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I'm gonna mark that down in my notes, and I'm gonna.
He also wants Canada.
I did hear about him wanting Canada.
So shout out to James K. Polk. If you guys know that one reference for U.S. history buffs, he's the reason why we have Alaska. But you know what? We have him part two.
Hey, that's true. That is very true.
If you know your history, that joke is gonna be like, oh my gosh, oh my god. But you gotta know your books.
Yeah, Sage is spitting tonight for you history buffs. let's see. Be kinder to Trent. That's definitely. That's top of the list. Yes. That's and I don't know if you've heard the episodes where I've talked about moving into the new job, but that's one of the things that I noticed about myself, how hard. I mean, I always knew I was hard on myself, but it really sort of came out with this new job and trying to learn and to grow.
Yeah.
You know, that's definitely on the top of the list. More edits. I have a stack of photos I'm sitting on. And also I want to volunteer this
Ooh,
year.
Let me know. I know a lot of places. I know plenty of places. Got Especially it. Growing up in the city, there's a lot of places that have volunteer work. I've done like a soup kitchen one time.
Oh, nice.
I've done, shout out to NYC Mesh. They work on mesh networks. So for uninitiated, they work on providing Wi-Fi services to people that are underprivileged and underserved, and they're able to, you know, give you fiber optic networks and fiber optic connections. They are mainly based in Brooklyn with their network, but they've expanded upwards to the Bronx. So definitely check out NYC Mesh. They have a relatively affordable installation fee. And you know what? They're full of awesome people. Definitely, they provide a Wi-Fi to Grand Street Guild buildings. Worth it.
And folks, he did not prepare that. He did not read off a card. That was just off the dome.
No, that was off the dome because I really, really love my work there. It was so nice to like go around, and especially in places, if you're familiar with the city, Lower East Side, Washington Heights, you were saying Riverdale, and a bunch of other places. You know, you walk outside and they say, good morning. Hello, how are you? So you still have that small town feel, and like they'll be like, oh, hi, Christian. Oh, my gosh. Nice to see you. So there's places still like that, especially in the hustle and bustle of the city. Maybe not downtown Manhattan because it's a bunch of people. But, you know, people like do care and look out for you. And those that population, they face a lot of scrutiny, a lot of like failings from governments and institutions and whatnot. So it's really nice to see that they have a lot of hope and a lot of soul over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
yeah. Shout out to the community. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very rare to actually see,
mm-hmm.
especially mm-hmm. nowadays where you have still communities that actually do care.
Yeah.
And they actually do go out there for the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you see that a lot when you volunteer. And also, I think for this episode, I do want to shout out some places that are doing mutual aid for LA because of the fires and stuff. I don't really try to get too topical because I like these episodes being timeless, but yes. That LA fire was really sad. It's still ongoing as of recording. So yeah, I'll try to see if we can link some mutual aid stuff in the show notes.
Absolutely.
For sharing. But yeah, volunteer work, definitely good for the soul. Definitely fun. Everybody's really cool on those spaces, and you meet really awesome, amazing, beautiful people.
Absolutely. So what do you have on your intentions? What you got?
My intentions... Good Natured Souls goes to EU, UK, wherever we go, but overseas yes. on tour. Dropping my projects this year, making new music, and really getting in the weeds of coding and that sphere of technology and promoting human-centered design and ethics. That's my favorite thing.
I love that. Yeah. Human-centered. Because didn't Amazon, like, lay off a bunch of people and hire a bunch of robots?
Yep. A lot of automation. And I feel like the way that companies do that is not necessarily how the headlines kind of write it. So a lot of times it's more so that the AI can't really replace the job. It's just more so that, you know, if you say that it can to stockholders and you do a little cost-cutting measures, that extra money gets put into AI development so that it gets at least a little bit better. And then, you know, you overwork your already stressed employees to to kind of circumvent their jobs and then say that those jobs replaced it. But now you have your current employees working harder than they ever worked. And then you have maybe a slightly marginal difference on the AI capabilities that are there. And then you have like the double kind of buyback and front end business type of increase by either cutting jobs and stuff. And I see that a lot industry wide. So I feel like that shouldn't be the case. I feel like you can make your money and still be the most profitable and still treat your employees with respect and dignity. Mm. And I think going into any workplace, that should be communicated. And I think stockholders or stakeholders can make as much money as they do now, if not more, if they treat their employees right.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of times, because I deal with a job where I communicate a lot with people via phone or even through email. And, you know, speaking to people on the phone, that's one of the biggest reliefs that they have. It's like, oh, my God, I have a real person. Like, that's awesome. You know, and I love to hear that. And I remember back at our old gig, Abe, we used to talk a lot about that. And a lot of, you know, working in the how could I put it without calling their name out? Working in the photo business, you know, a lot of the their future plans. You could have just bleeped it out. Yeah, I've said it a million times. Yeah, but, you know, their plans on, you know, replacing people in the industry of tourist photography, you know, and it seems like we were speaking about it earlier. It seems that they care less and less about the employees, and it would make, it would make perfect sense to just, you know, just replace us all.
Yeah, but you lose a lot of that love that, you know, it's nice to get a little hi, hello, especially in a tourist experience. You like to feel like you are, like, a tourist's dream is to feel like they're native, but in a foreign environment to the point where they're able to notice. And when you're in your natural environment, it's hard to notice because you have a job, you have a place. So you want to go to escape, to notice, to give attention. Mm-hmm. So especially when you get that attention paid to you, that's all people want at the end of the day, to be very seen and felt.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that also ties in with our main theme for the day. So
with the transition.
I'm ready.
What a segue. Yeah,
I wasn't ready. No, you good.
I was going to chat for the whole time, but I was like.
No, folks. So when I was about five, maybe six, I told my mom that I wanted to be a scientist.
Wow.
Not a microbiologist, yes, just a scientist.
Just a scientist.
And in my head, I had this picture of myself, you know how kids think, like in a lab coat with beakers and different things, just mixing chemicals and, yeah, you know, causing doing little explosions. Stuff. Yes. With my goggles on, and yes, you know, I was helping the world, and I said that because I knew it would be important to her, and I knew that it would fill her with a sense of pride, you know. And then growing up, looking back at it, you know, I've always sort of struggled with, personally, with a sense of purpose. Back then, I was like, I'll just say anything. You know, I can do anything. And then as you get older, you know, the world in a lot of cases, in my experience, the world and your opportunities feel like they're getting smaller and smaller, you know, and you have to adjust yourself. And you have to realize a lot of the things that you've been told that you want or you should want aren't really for you. So in that regards, I've always sort of struggled between making others happy and making myself happy, you know, as far as developing a sense of purpose, you know. Yeah. And I think a result of that is, and I guess that brings us to the first question I'm going to ask around the room, you know, how do you define purpose? And also, I guess a secondary question is, how did you, if you feel like you have a a purpose or purposes. It doesn't have to be just one. I know for me, I sort of have two categories for it, kind of like the Safe Spaces episode. Yeah. It's kind of sort of the same thing, but how did you come to reveal these purposes for yourself? You know. And if you guys need a little time to think, you can. I'll go first, but you know, whatever.
For me, in my earlier years, I looked at purpose as a, of course, it's going to be a goal that you're trying to reach, but that's a psychological belief. Mm-hmm. It's not a philosophical one.
Yeah.
When I started to realize that there are philosophical purpose of it, then I had to change my mentality.
Yeah.
Meaning where I had to define what purpose was, which is the intent, what we were talking about earlier, that intent. And when I started to realize that intent is not mine.
Yeah.
It's not my purpose, because I'm in the belief and I come from a religious family.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at the aspect of not in the natural, but in the spiritual. Because if once you find what is purpose, you have to define what is divine providence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what is intent? Intent is something that it is or was created. But what is divine providence? Providence is the governance of God, which he, with his wisdom, directs all things in the universe.
Mm.
So that's how I live.
Yeah.
And that's how I see it. So, like when I was a kid, when you had goals when you was a kid, you wanted to be a scientist.
Yeah.
And not define what kind of physicist you want to be.
Yeah.
But yes. I wanted to be a baseball player.
Yeah.
That was my goal. But when I did not reach that, my intent and my desire totally changed.
Yeah.
Where more anxiety happened, more pressure happened. Because now I have to figure out, what am I doing?
Yeah.
What is my life? What am I living for? And when I started to deny that fact, so there is the philosopher Immanuel Kant,
who said, yes,
love Kant here on the podcast.
But even though he was racist, but I always point that out because that informs a lot. It's important to shout people in context.
Yes. So one of his philosophies that I love so much was that he said, I had to deny my knowledge to let faith come in.
Yeah.
And that is what I believe is my purpose. My purpose is whatever is the Holy Spirit guiding me into.
Yeah.
And by his will is how I live. But that's my philosophical perspective.
Yeah.
What is yours?
Yeah. I was actually having a conversation. Shout out to Jules, always.
Shout out to Jules.
About faith.
I don't know Jules, but shout out to you.
Yeah, one of the best friends in the world. And I was talking to, you know, what the meaning of hope and faith is. And even outside of a religious framework or a philosophical framework, it's just, for me, it's like an avenue in which, you know, let's say you're holding on to an object, and the object that you're holding on to, you hold on to it tight. And you could swing the object no matter direction, you know, that you personally, with that type of grip around it, it will be safe. And it's just like, imagine that, but with your dreams, with your aspirations, and with where you want to go. If you have that kind of strength and that type of hold on something, you'll be able to reach it.
So are you looking at it at a psychological perspective then?
More materialistic, but in the sense that there's different versions of materialism, which I actually learned by like diving into like philosophy and everything, but I'm not 100% because I don't have full knowledge and full scope, but how this kind of saying goes, from wherever source I got it, sorry guys, it was talking about how native and indigenous peoples viewed the world as a material thing. Meaning that it wasn't just a world of appearance, as like in Western culture, as something that is simulacrum or something simulated or something for our eyes only. It's a real thing. It's physical. And they use this example in which, you know, you are a young kid and you want to learn how to ride a horse, right? You bring a child to the horse and you sit the child right on the horse with no saddle. And then you let him run around with the saddle, with the horse with no saddle, and try to ride it. Then you bring the kid back, and on the following day, you bring him back with the horse, and you give him the saddle and the stirrups and everything. And now you tell the kid, you understand that this is an animal, first and foremost, and that that animal, with these tools that I just gave you today, gives you the ability to direct and have him help you on his journey. Now you respect his material existence.
So I've seen that as, do you know the philosopher Albert Camus?
I am not familiar.
So,
Albert Camus. Yes.
So he believed in
existentialism.
Existentialism. Yes. So that's where I'm getting your vibe from, what you were explaining.
Yeah.
But then I have to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
You're teaching this child how to respect and how to move with this animal. But what happens if that child, sooner or later, just stops?
Oh, I feel like at the end of the day, you have to, with any child, you have to let them make choices and allow for their fullness of freedom. And doing like a lot of fullness and freedom in life, whether it's through works, through acts of service, through charity and everything, I think that God and the universe and everything, there's so much love that exists in the universe that it will present in various different ways to guide you in the proper direction. It's just up to the person's decision at the end of the day to make choices. But it's kind of, there's a thought experiment, and it's like, if you go through life and you can pick your own life, right? And you can make sure you live through all every good choice possible, be the richest person possible, be able to get everything that you want in life. Eventually, you reach a point where you get bored. And so you add more randomness, more versatility, more chance. So maybe you are the richest man, but you don't have all the answers all the time. Correct. And then what you do is, over time, you get to a point where you just lessen the amount of control to the point where it very much simulates how our lives are, to the point where we're able to make choices in a land of unknown. Mm-hmm. And the only thing really holding you is faith and hope.
I do agree with that. With the what is holding us is faith and hope. Now, for me, in my faith and in my hope, I am predestined to reach something.
Yeah.
So my predestination for me is heaven.
Yeah.
So what is my goal to reach that? Is it my goal, or is it my will, in other words, or is it his will or his plan in me?
Yeah, I think I agree with that, because I grew up Catholic and everything, but I did always find a thing with Catholic teachers in the sense that we're no longer in a society that bases its wholeness around the sanctity of the church, right? There's no mm-hmm. type of sacredness in a postmodern society, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily, you can be a religious person, and religiosity has no supremacy. So in the sense that if someone is a Hindu practitioner or a Christian practitioner or an Islamic practitioner or any Abrahamic religions, any indigenous religions, any type of spirituality, we're all trying to chase or be a part of the human experience. And in my idea, the universe wouldn't have existed or even allowed for certain actions to be permissible if it wasn't intended to. Even in the lack of intention of creation, you know, you can do an action and there's always an opposite reaction. Mm-hmm. That is an intentional type of dynamic of the way that the world is set up. And so, in doing that, like philosophers talk about the nature of good and evil, and we talked about in the episode, and the goodness of the nature of good and evil is that evil is just the lack of good. It's not its own entity. So if you were to think about it as like a solid object and empty object, right? For instance, this room is full of air, and there's a lot of particles, but the space in between is lack of something. Mm-hmm. And the lack of something gives definition to the few objects that are in the space of things. The air that we breathe, the nitrogen, the oxygen. But the space in between makes it a gas. So the definition of things are very intertwined. So it's like yin and yang. You have to have a lack and fullness of stuff. And to kind of tie it back to that type of sense of purpose, and communicating religious and notions of faith or spirituality and hope and faith, I feel like you can explain it in frameworks or contexts so that you meet people where they are. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, just my relationship to the nature of what heaven is, I think it's a state of mind and state of being, a state of presence as well. Because the more present you are, you don't necessarily need to bankroll on. Some people use heaven as a metric of bankrolling, and there's even talk about in scriptures about the nature of the history of the scapegoat. As you have an animal, it's a sacrificial lamb, and then you send the lamb out and you cast away the bad actions of the group that participated with it. Yeah, that converts to sin. And, those people didn't really deal with the issues that caused that, the system that caused that, the feelings that caused that. They didn't really approach it. They just cast it out. Mm-hmm. And I think in doing so, you relinquish a lot of like ownership and accountability, and also group accountability, collective accountability. So I think the next step, at least being like a faithful and hopeful man in the future, is to teach people that, heaven is as much present to you as it is a future to you.
I understand what you're saying with that. I think I see it a little bit different, or because I do have that background.
Yeah.
I'm a student of theology.
Yeah.
Just to put it out
there. I love theologies.
So I see...
Shout out Thomas Aquinas.
So I see heaven more than a state of mind.
Yeah. I think it's everything. I think heaven is everything that you make. Like, the fact that you can witness a baby crying and witness an adult man on his last breath. The profundity of both emotions being in the purview of your ability to perceive things is insanity. Mm-hmm. And it's so beautiful. And it's just very... I think the radical step to be someone that pushes that is to see the beauty in all things, very similar to how God sees it, in my opinion. And I think that is what alleviates... It's kind of like intentions and resolutions that we're saying. You can be very resolute in state and faith, and that's good. Mm-hmm. But you can be also very intentional in faith, very providential in faith, mm-hmm. and really live it.
True. That's the...
That's like the ultimate for me.
That is the ultimate, and that is the downfall for many people who are in the faith, so-called. Or have some type of spirituality where mm-hmm. they believe, but they don't follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's like what you were saying, you're more of the a reasoning perspective.
Yeah.
To where there's a cause and effect about that. Where in nature, there is, where you're saying like the good and evil, there is a consequence behind their action or their beliefs.
Yeah.
In other words. So this is where I say it's higher than a state of mind, because once we only think of a state of mind, then you're not looking at it as a spiritual sense, in my view.
Yeah.
In my view, I look at it where somebody is putting it as a state of mind, that you're looking at your will.
Yeah.
Instead of saying his will.
Yeah.
So that's the difference between me and those who have a different perspective in spirituality, mm-hmm. to where I don't look at it as my will, but his will. Because with his will, his plans come alive.
Yeah.
So give you a prime example, like I was talking about before, like I wanted to become a baseball player, and mm-hmm. I did not reach that goal. That was my will.
Yes.
That was my predestination mm-hmm. that I put out for myself, basically saying that is my goal. Because I did not achieve that goal, why I didn't achieve it? And those are the questions I started to ask myself.
Yeah.
Why I didn't achieve it. What was the cause of my not achieving what I was set out to do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now when I started to research and do my homework behind all of this, I started to see that every plan that we have is already predestined. Mm-hmm. It's already been written. From the person who makes it to the NFL, it's already a predestined for him to make it there. But what was the purpose behind him making there? And if he made it there on his own will, how happy is he at the end of it? Mm-hmm. Because we could make our goals and we could achieve them. but what is the happiness behind it? What is the ultimate goal after that?
Yeah.
Because after all that we achieve, what is there?
Yeah.
It's only death.
Yeah. And I think what you're speaking about calls into question like this one example. I think one, an existentialist, I don't know the specific philosopher, but he brought up this thought experiment in the sense of someone that was like a swimmer, mm-hmm. and then they lose the ability to swim, and then they face that anxiety and that type of thing there. And what he argues is that that feeling was always there, but it was masked behind your passion and your drive to do something, which is what I'm thinking or grasping about what you're speaking on, and you're talking about the nature of surrendering. And reverence. Yes. And I agree. And yes. We're saying very similar thing. I agree in the nature of surrendering, mm-hmm. and the nature of, you know, letting life guide you, and the nature of predestination and fate. And I think fate, faith, and free will are very intertwined, and people try to make them as opposing forces, but I think they all exist in tandem with each other to give context to the next. And I think, you know, actions are predestined, right? Mm-hmm. For instance, even on a psychological level, the nature of the way that you perceive things is a 0.16 millisecond delay. Mm-hmm. How can you even be present, mm-hmm. scientifically? Mm-hmm. So the more we learn about the world, the more it just proves that we're just beings of time. And so as beings of time, we have a limited space, and we're only able to operate here. And so we may think we have the most free will possible within a thing, but you're slated for a specific time. You exist here. You mm-hmm. are here.
Yeah.
And so even in your own existence, yeah. you're in a limit.
Like,
and
even outside of faith, yo, it's pre-written. You're going to die.
You're going to die. It's pre-written. So even the yeah. nature of predestination is not wholly like antithetical to life. Mm-hmm. But what is life if not striving and learning and lessons and, you know, embracing the natures of it and the frameworks and the context that life can be, from, you know, the joy of watching it be born and the joy of seeing it be completed and the feeling of loss and the feeling of grief, and all of that is life. And it's just like, it's very beautiful to kind of embrace that as your purpose, because then at that point there's nothing else stopping you from wholly executing what you were destined, or one of the destinations that you're able to do. Because even now with the nature of, you know, multiverses and stuff like that in science, I think that's also a part of it. And it's very funny because if we were to kind of go, this is a little tangent, but if we were to go to the nature of how computers work, you know, computers work with processes. And so you can outsource already physical existing stuff and hardware to execute certain processes. And so, you know, what if the universe is doing that? Maybe in one universe you want to run process where you're doing one action, where you're one, when you made the baseball team, and then this is a version of life where you didn't, yeah. and you just want to see the processes of it. Mm-hmm. Well, if I was a supreme being, I would want to see all the processes of all the creations that I can make. I've run a multi-processing function of the way that life is.
No, I want to see Sage as a supreme being. But I guess in a way
I think we're all divine beings. It's just not necessarily superseding the nature of God and what that is. But I think, you know, everything that is created is good. What is good if not divine? It's like, you know, this earth, this ability to think, to perceive, to see, this universe, this one verse of many verses, this one plane that we are privy to, and that God or whatever entity he calls himself is able to see, depending on your religious context. I think religion is supposed to bring you closer to you, to it, in that specific context, because like you're saying, it's something that you're born into. You're born in this specific time and period to understand God in this specific way, to execute processes in life and see the world that was predestined for you in this specific version of time so that you can be yourself. And that's a very special and radical thing to be, because there's no one else that will ever exist at the specific time that you are, even the multiplicities of you. There's no person like you, ever. You are the prime anomaly in life. And if that is not a purpose, I don't know what is. You just are you. I think that's a lot of it was hope, but that's why I was tearing up yesterday, because it's just like, that's very profound. And you should have reverence for just life itself. It doesn't necessarily, it could be an atheist context, it can be a religious context. For me personally, people that are atheists, I feel like they stem from, you know, a sense of feeling like there was a lack in care, mm-hmm. or a lack of reasoning, or a lack of something. There was a lack, absolutely. That they saw. And so it became a response. Absolutely. And so their versions of understanding became a response. But because you see a lack in something does not necessarily mean that you can't live your most radical sense of being, even in the framework of others. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can have a person that hates people and loves people help to rebuild a house for somebody else for their own reasoning, and they both did a good deed. Mm-hmm. The kind of judgment that you have for somebody is something that is not reserved for you, because you don't have that purview. So it's like, you can't judge somebody because you don't know that. But the fact that they did that good action and that good intention, and they saw that somebody else was provided with something that they had a lack of, whether it'll be the reasoning of I had to step up because nobody else will, or I do this in reverence and service to my faith, they both created something that wasn't there. And so they created a fullness of good instead of allowing the lack to persevere.
I understand what you're saying with that. But that's a theological, another podcast for theologians.
Yeah, I know. Theologians will simultaneously love and hate me, because at the end of the day, I think it goes into, there's a philosopher, Slavoj Žižek, and he talks about ideology. And I think ideology, everybody has ideology. I have ideology. It's just how we function mm-hmm. and work. And in order for things to work, you have to deny others. There has to be a lack of something in your space or your gas to justify the points that you make in your gas, to give it form and definition as a gas that you're breathing.
And seeking fulfillment. Mm-hmm. Damn, I've reverted back to season one, Trent. I'm just sitting here.
No, you're good. You're good. I'm so sorry.
Y'all are good. I love absorbing and listening. This is so much fun.
But yeah, how do you feel? How do you feel about it?
So I guess when I was writing stuff down, I guess jotting my thoughts down throughout the week about purpose, I see it as two things. And a lot of it may sort of differ. Like, it may sort of go into the side of goals a little bit, yeah.
I think is, mind you, more manageable for
absolutely
having like high level like intellect,
yeah. But just sort of the same with safe spaces, there's always overlap, mm-hmm. and one exists to, you know, for the other. So I have, I guess, an overall purpose, I guess, that I've sort of realized when I thought about you know, the things that give me energy and make me feel whole and more, and make me feel like I'm supposed to be here. I guess the number one thing that I always come back to, and this is, I guess, I call it a tribal purpose or a worldly purpose, is it would be healing people or servicing people in some sense. And a lot of times what that is creating a safe space, allowing people to be themselves. And I think that was sort of born out of what I call the youngest child syndrome. You know, always being sort of there and being neutral and being born into a world where a lot of these problems existed before me. You know, why does mommy and daddy not get along? Why are we only living, you know, in this spot? Why do we not like the neighbor? You know, what did they do? I just got here. I don't know. You know, why is everybody mad that that daddy brought his new girlfriend to the birthday party? What is that? You know, but it's sort of, and it wasn't, I feel like that was something that was kind of inherited. And I guess a lot of people call it nice guy syndrome. And that's something I've always struggled with, but I think I have more of a, I guess control is the best word, over it. And I see its benefits, although, you know, there has to be some pullback from myself. And that's where the other one comes in, the sort of what I call a more, personal or intimate purpose, things I do for myself, things that heal me and fulfill me. And, you know, the things that I don't share. Sometimes I share with the world, but those things sort of like writing or a lot of my drawings, you know, simply doing those things, send me into a flow state, and they allow me to sort of be better because I'm not a very social person. I mean, that's a skill that I've sort of honed over the years. Like, I've learned how to navigate through a lot of social situations, but my, as the kids say, my social battery is very short, you know, and it takes a lot of energy to be around people, you know? But there are certain circumstances, like, you know, like when you're with the right people, sometimes that shit don't matter. But you know, and so I have to do these things in order to fill myself. And then that helps me get into the world. And it also informs me of how I can help others. You know, because if I have to say, like, the thing as far as like purpose is really just creating, like, that, I think that's the best way I can help people. Like this podcast, for instance. You know, it's actually, the podcast kind of exists on both planes. You know, it fills me, but it allows me to bring the people I know in and help them see value in themselves, you know. And I've had so many people come up to me and tell me, well, not like off the street, people I know, it's like, you know, because nobody's going to know how I look if they just heard it and not met me. But, you know, tell me that, oh, wow, you were saying exactly what I was thinking, or, you know, it's such a easy listen, and, you know, tell me how much they can relate to it. So, yeah. That's what, not to talk too much, because
no,
I got like paragraphs, and I want to make it through some of these questions because we never make it to everything that I have in my notes.
It's the intentions.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So do any of you guys have, well, I'll frame it like this. You know, and it's kind of the same question, but how has, you know, your purpose evolved, you know, throughout the years? Like, how have you seen it, you progress. Know, fluctuate and progress?
Like, you and I worked together for a good while.
Yes, yes, yes.
So one of the things that you and I talked about and what I was trying to teach at the location was not only how to move within the job or understand what is the business aspect of the company, but I also, in indirect form, was trying to give you guys a spiritual sense behind everything. Because for me, that's how I try to operate in life, where I will give you the natural, but at the same time, I will give you the spiritual without you even knowing that that other part of it was actually spiritual. And saying that is more of where I try to get you guys to move in the same or higher level than I was. So yes, I was the manager. But what are you, if not to grow in this place or to grow in some other place? Because this is not your last stop. I've never believed in a location that you ever worked that that's the last place you're going to be. I believe that, like you, you want to help people. You want to create a certain belief in somebody that they could believe that they could grow higher than what they actually thought of. And that was the same type of level that I was trying to bring you guys into, to where I wanted you guys to strive a lot higher than the owner that owned the company. Mm-hmm. Because you and I already talked about where I know some of your goals. Mm-hmm. But how are you going to reach that goal if you did not believe in yourself? Mm-hmm. So that was my job. That was my operation, to help you believe that that goal, that you can actually achieve it. Mm-hmm. And then in the spiritual sense, is that once you reach that goal, that you are actually happy that you're actually there.
Facts.
Mm-hmm. Because without that spiritual, or that spiritual belief, and for me, everything is God. It's all faith to me. Mm-hmm. So like I was trying to explain earlier, where if a person makes it to the NFL, but their destination was not with the Holy Spirit, how happy are they? They can make as much money. They can have as much lavish life that they can have. But how happy are they at the end?
Yeah. And that's another, like, you can really reach an end of a task and be so unhappy. And I've seen it so, so many times. And when you see that firsthand, you definitely have a new sense, a newfound of appreciation for where you are. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes it takes, sometimes, you know, some people are hard-headed. They need to see it for themselves. They need to go through it to see it at the end, mm-hmm. to then have a comeuppance. Or sometimes, you know, it's a stubbornness that someone may not get it, but that's all part of the plan of this life. Like, you're supposed to, it's not supposed to be something where, you know, you get it without allowing yourself to get it. You have to put in the work to get it something. And sometimes some people are lost at where to get it. But I think in actions every day, small things sum up to a greater whole of just getting it. And like you spoke to that like super, super well. And I think you touched on something like really fire, which is like everybody's kind of like draw to be better, to transcend. Mm-hmm. And I think just the nature of the word transcending and what that really means in everyday life, even in the modern context, is everyone just wants to be at a higher place, closer to life. Like, you know, you put life in a little petri dish and it always strives, and life is striving, mm-hmm. and life is always reaching, and connection is just getting close enough to feel the presence of someone, even if you can't even reach them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's a high purpose. I know I'm a little off topic, so I want
you're fine.
To ask the question one more time.
I was gonna bring it back to Abe. So how, when did, I would say, and I guess we can, you know, anybody throw it out. How did your purpose evolve to that, what it was? And kudos to you, because let's give a round of applause for Abe, because he really did try and help us understand the business and the intricacies of it. And it was not just the how, but the why.
When you give someone the why, the context, you realize a lot about your environment, and it gives you more agency. Mm-hmm. Once the fish knows he's in water, he can swim across the sea.
Absolutely. I don't know. Did we actually? Those sages is full of gems. I don't even know if we defined it, but I'll just put it in simple terms. The purpose is meaning for something to exist, and that was kind of what you were doing with the job. You know, when you taught us the why, it was like this. These are why these things in place, and now that you understand that, you know. We were able to move forward more, of course, no pun intended, purposefully. It's like, okay, this is why we have to do this. Now we can look at it, you know, from a we can take a step back and look at it from a fuller standpoint.
Yeah.
And that helped us execute and especially answer more questions, because everybody's always got questions. But anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah, back to the evolved. Yeah. How did your purpose
to the job topic of you and I?
Yeah.
So as that year progressed, and as much as I taught, as much as I also learned, because I've also learned from you guys as well, I started to see what was the end game. Mm-hmm. And when the end game did not fulfill the desire that I wanted, mm-hmm. I knew there was a different time. There was a different thing that I had to do. I had to transform to another person, or I had to, in other words, I had to conclude with this place and find another purpose.
Facts.
Yeah. That's funny because we dead touched on that in a less. we touched on that before. It was just like, it's a transitional period to be at this location and we're talking about it. And it's just like, oh yeah, something that you transition, but the transition informs where you're. I'm so sorry. That's gonna be so bad.
I should have muted you. Yeah.
The sneeze didn't go, but I know the pause.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my god. Sage is going off on a tangent. Yeah.
This is gonna be so funny in post. But somebody's gonna be like, did my podcast cut off? But we leave it all in. But that transitional phase makes it so that you can be happy at the end. Like, without, you know, that struggle of doing all that stuff, I wouldn't be as hopeful as I am having concluded that chapter.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, all things have an expiration date. But yeah, Sage, how about you? How has your purpose evolved over years, even in your young years?
I think a little kid knows his purpose, and I think that the world tells you things that you should be, and I think going through life is learning that you have to fulfill your original purpose that you yourself knew.
So I got to be a scientist is what you're telling me.
Hey, I remember I wanted to be a storyteller when I was a little kid, and I am a storyteller now.
Facts.
So you're a scientist. Science is physics, writing, art is a science. Everything is a science.
Yeah, so I made it. Mama made it. Listening to this, I made it.
There's a science to a good podcast. There's a lot of science is just a kind of empirical, physical reality of making something and trying to understand the why.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. So, and you asking even questions about, like, look at the podcast topics that you pick. What is your purpose? What is this? You're asking and fulfilling your original thing. Whether you realize it, acknowledge it or not, You're a scientist in that regard. Scientist doesn't mean that you go, you can get the institutional scientist that goes through the institutions, but you can take inklings of different professions and incorporate it into your life. You could be a theologian by philosophizing and thinking about the nature of religion, and you become a theologian by spreading and doing that in your everyday, whether it's in the managerial sense and just living that. It's your vocation. It's your purpose of living. You were like, oh yeah, I need to find this thing. This aligns with my purpose. It doesn't. So let me create an environment that allows me, a context that allows me to execute my purpose. So you realize your purpose beforehand, or you came to a conclusion of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think life is just, you know, fulfilling that purpose that you feel.
Now, I will throw it back because I know the question was, how was your transition? And finding that purpose,
mm-hmm.
which I think I didn't answer it all the way, but what is the side reward? Are you looking, once you reach that purpose or once you find that purpose, is there a personal benefit to you? Because for me, there is no personal benefit once I even reach that purpose.
Mm.
That's a very radical way to do it. Yeah. And me personally, that's how I do it.
Okay.
And I think that's the more fulfilling way to do it, but that's the secret way.
I think it's kind of a contradiction because if it is fulfilling, then there is personal.
Yeah. I think the more selfless you are in your intentions and your execution of things, the more selfish your rewards are. Because your being is so interconnected with being less attached to something,
mm-hmm.
that you're allowing yourself to fully experience it. So, like, you know, you dive head first into the wave, you get knocked back, but you surrender to the wave, and now you enjoy the thrill of being carried.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, and it's a personal satisfaction to the point that you learn how to surf.
You're always going to feel the happiness behind reaching that goal,
mm-hmm.
but ultimately, the happiness is not because you reached it, but because you made somebody else fulfill their destination as well.
Mm.
I think that's one of my biggest purpose. Not something that I saw growing up for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I only learned that later in life, where anywhere that I went, I started to acknowledge what I believe God has sent me to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where I started to speak to other people. And then I started to see small changes, because not everybody's going to take your advice to the fullest.
Not at all.
But even the little bit of message that was sent, and they can carry that on, that was my happiness. That was my purpose. That's where I felt happy. Mm-hmm. But I didn't feel happy just for myself, but I felt more happiness because I saw the other person grow.
Yeah.
And what the message was, and not just because of me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I always say, like, especially in recent years, like, I love the phrase exist altruistic. Mm-hmm. And I even, like, I think, okay, I'll break it down. Utilitarianism is the most happiness to the most people, which, good start when you're, like, younger, but I grew out of that. And I think altruism, which is a little bit different, is focusing on the nature of giving for everyone. So it's like for every, and it's for, you're included in everyone too. Mm. And just existing and being altruistic and not necessarily doing that and finding the differences between utilitarianism and altruism. Utilitarianism, you're just a tool of happiness, which limits the range of things that you can do. But altruism is the acknowledgement. It's the acknowledgement of this animal is its own being, but it's going to help you execute your purpose.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a tool to you. That's a beautiful way, as opposed to utilitarian versus altruistic. And I think that, you know, the more altruistic you are in your purpose in life, the more fulfilled you are. And then I also wanted to swing this question to you.
Go for it.
How does depression and the nature of anxiety and sadness and grief affect one's ability and clarity to see purpose? And what are some steps that you think that you can implement as someone that is on the outside, as someone that wants to see people grow? And then what's the kind of experience as people living within that, and how can they, you know, help each other out? Because I think both sides work in tandem of each other.
So for me, and I say it with all due respect.
Yeah.
I don't feel depression.
Yeah.
And I don't feel anxiety.
Yeah.
Do I feel sadness? Of course, you got to feel sad because many things happen in life.
Yeah.
But when it comes to depression and anxiety, I do not have that. I do not feel that. I reject anything with depression and anxiety.
Okay.
For me, that does not exist. For me, that is a tool of something spiritual trying to hold you back.
Yeah.
Yes, that is a theological perspective to it.
Yeah.
But that's the ideology that I believe in.
Yeah.
To where, and I do have a testimony behind that, but that's for another day.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right. No,
you're good. For another pod.
We make more wider on podcasts.
Yeah, yeah, no. But I will say that you have such a, like, a beautiful light and conviction, and I feel it, and I just wanted to say, like, I really appreciate it. Like, just listening and hearing you as a person, like, I can tell that you do amazing things all the time, every time.
I like what you just said, because that's where I was actually going.
Yeah.
So when you said conviction, my conviction allowed me to grow into the person that I am today, because what I went through,
yeah,
and what I had to climb from
made
me who I am today.
Yeah.
And by knowing that, because in a way, I think I already fulfilled the purpose that I am here, not knowing exactly everything.
Yeah.
But like Trent, he wants to create, and not only create, but create in people. Because we all could say that we have a certain destiny with people. You have the gift of gab. I can tell you that right now.
I do. Thank you. I definitely do.
But the words that come out of your mouth can actually help or actually transcend in somebody's life. Because even hearing you, and I thank you for what you have said, but I also have to congratulate you as well. Because the words that you are saying also fulfill something in me. Because now I can use the same knowledge that you are sharing and share with
someone else. That's altruism. That's why I was saying it's for everyone. It's not, it's a surrendering and it's a full on, it's the same type of radicalism. And the cool thing is that we execute it in different ways to execute different purposes that we're supposed to serve. And the same way with you, you execute radical beliefs. And it's crazy because the most simplest of things are the most radical of things. Mm-hmm. Wow, the world is made out of atoms. You can make a bomb or you can make energy for the world. Mm-hmm. Radical.
And it depends how you use it.
Depends on how you use it. You can use the gift of gab to do horrendous things. You can use it to do beautiful things. You can use your convictions to do beautiful works, but you can also use it to convince and to corrupt. You can use your power to create beautiful things, or you can do that to create chaos and destruction. And all those work in tandem with each other. Gives definition to each other, the ways in which it fails and the ways in which it succeeds. Mm-hmm. And it's up to you to really push that purpose and keep on pushing for good, to be good natured.
I will elevate what you're saying as well, because yes, I hear what you're saying,
yeah,
but I take that in the natural.
Yeah.
So in the spiritual, there is a saint, or there is actually a verse in John which I would like to share.
Yeah,
please do.
And it says, I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge. And my judgment is righteous because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Meaning that everything that, yes, you could use one thing one way or the other, but if you're using something in righteousness and in his will, everything falls in place.
Yeah.
Everything has that sense of purpose that you were looking for at the end of it. There is so much gratitude towards it. There's so much passion behind it.
Yeah.
And you will continue. Whereas somebody who has fulfilled without having that spiritual sense behind it, will never have that sense.
Yeah.
And I know that by experience, because I know a lot of people who have reached a lot of goals.
Mm-hmm.
Give you a quick example. I know of a person who has reached multiple goals. He became rich. He's a billionaire. To this day, he still is. But before he realized the spiritual sense behind it, he was never happy. And
yeah,
he even said in an interview, he said that I have reached all these goals and I thought that this was my purpose. And when certain purposes do not reach, like where we have to transform
yeah.
or transition that purpose, he went and did that as well, thinking that that was going to reach his happiness or that passion that he was looking for. And it wasn't. It was not until he realized that our Father in heaven, the Father who has created us, who has actually gave us the purpose, who actually planned the life that we are living today, that's when he realized that the happiness he was searching for was not in the goal that he was trying to reach, but the love of Christ in him.
Yeah, I think that for me, it's that word righteousness that trips a lot of people up. Mm-hmm. It's the nature of righteousness, and I think righteousness and purpose are like, purpose should lead you, there's the righteous path to purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think when you communicate it in that way, some people get tripped up on righteousness and don't know how to dissect that word.
Mm-hmm.
So some people are righteous by, you know, being overzealous.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be the antithesis of what you're even trying to do with righteousness. So that's one way that people get tripped up. Another way is thinking that their purpose, like you said, is chasing these goals to be a righteous man. And it's like, that also is a path of righteousness or a place where people get tripped up on trying to follow the righteous path. And then there's a whole plethora of different ways that you could jump into with the word righteousness. But I 100% agree with what you're saying, and that is righteousness is the path, and the nature of of God and set in general. And I think Spinoza talks about, Spinoza is a really good person and philosopher to really dive into for every person to have the language on both the front that you're talking about it and the front that I'm talking about it, because we're touching on all the aspects of it in that context, and then you can reach it yourself without tripping up on righteousness.
True. I understand that there's going to be a lot of people who's going to always question the way we speak or certain words that we use.
Yeah. So I try to always communicate in a way that a little kid could grab it, but an adult can grab it too. And it's just like, it's not even intellectual things. It's just spiritual things. Mm-hmm. Some spiritual messages go from one ear out the other. And then some of them just hit because it's just like, I relate to it. Same way where like I created something that's, I related to it. Mm-hmm. It's like the there's a science to it. And I think we're both hitting on the science of it and the way that it's going to hit that specific person. You're going to hit them with the religious context. And I 100% agree with the religious context because we come from the same framework. So like we believe in this very similar or very the same things. It's just the way that we reach that belief is unique to us. And so just meeting them where they are. But I 100% agree with what you said. And I've seen it myself. I've seen people with immense wealth. I've seen people with the poor, with nothing. I've seen people with nothing be just as happy or just as sad as someone with things that are just as happy and just as sad. Mm-hmm. But I know for, especially like in the framework of like relationships and the things for people, I think there's a level of being very radical in your approach to giving and, you know, doing for others what others should do for you in a way that allows somebody when they are afflicted, because you have the gift of perseverance. I genuinely think that if someone is lost, it is very hard to even know that you're lost. And certain, even like if you're spiritually lost, I feel like it's very difficult to discern where your purpose is or where your things lie. And it's not a matter of perseverance, because you're persevering because you're still alive and you're still asking those questions, but it becomes a quest to understand what is righteousness, and then you end up in the pitfalls of trying to reach it. So I think that especially with like depression and those types of symptoms, it's just
That was the question, huh?
It's just I think it's the interaction with like a lot of death and understanding, becoming acquainted with it in a way that tries to suck energy out of you. And how, as someone with conviction, can I convince somebody that has none? It's not like you can physically go into their minds, give them the answers to do it.
Not at all.
And like vice could fall on deaf ears. And I think it's super important to acknowledge that that is the case and then change the approach the same way that a scientist or theologian does. They already know they're set. And so there's someone that isn't set. So the thing is to make it so that you yourself are doing as much as possible while also respecting their agency to make it there themselves, to make it that they're set.
I understand what you're saying with that. Yes, I agree with what you're saying. Also, when I speak to people, even when people are almost rejecting what I'm trying to say, I feel that it's not my job to convince them, regardless of what I say or do. It's not my job to give them, because that's only going to bring more strife between me and the person who I'm actually talking to.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
So yes, I understand where people will take certain things and they will reject it because of their own ideology.
Yeah.
But that's not the purpose that I am speaking to someone, not to convince them to believe in what I am saying, but to grasp what I'm saying and maybe apply to what their thoughts are. And I'm going back to the job because that's where
absolutely. That's
it's a good framework for people to understand.
Part of convergence.
because I know when before I came to the job, they already had heard about me.
Yeah.
And I think in a way, I felt that you guys rejected the person of me without knowing me because of what was being said. So that that information that you were receiving had given you a notion of something that was never there. And this is out of your confession, because you guys told me afterwards that everything that was said, this was never came to fruition.
Yeah.
And it was just the opposite. So that's where I believe, even if I speak in a theological form about my ideology, I'm not trying to convince you to believe, but I am trying to make you understand that there's probably more than what you think.
Yeah, and that's why I can understand and I can see, but I think language has veils behind it.
It's, I agree.
And I think that's the big thing that I think philosophers of linguistics and language have talked about, that we were supposed to use language as a form of communication, and in communication, things get lost in translation. Like, you can't convey what a feeling feels like. And when you do an abstraction of something, it gets less and less. It's a derivative of what came before. And so, you know, in communicating and trying to push language, we're changing and creating meaning to, you know, strive and reach.
Yeah.
And I guess to kind of push it to you, Trent, how do you think, in like a world of like ideology, can you help people find purpose and also find love and meaning in that purpose?
All right. I'm going to try. No, I'm not. Well, I'm going to go back to the question before.
Yeah, and answer the question before, too.
Yeah. So, and it kind of ties into it. So how do you, and I guess it sort of feels like the same thing. How do you respond to somebody that's despondent, you know, that, that's depressed or, and, you know, in some senses lack purpose. I think for me, there's a few ways to do that. You know, suggesting therapy. Shout out to therapy. But, and, you know, it, even more so than that, I use a lot of my own. I try to rely heavily on my own experiences, especially, you know, when speaking to people, to show them, hey, I was in this place and this is what therapy did for me. This is what doing these things did for me. You know, and I try to be as vulnerable as possible, because you never know, even if because we don't know who we're speaking to, you know, we can only assume who's listening, but you never know. Like I was talking about with Steven when I was trying to encourage him to continue writing. Shouts out to Steven. You know, you never know who you're going to touch.
Yeah, you never know the profundity of that.
Absolutely. So I try to be as vulnerable as possible. And once again, giving people that space, because, you know, sometimes when you are depressed, sometimes you just got to feel that, you know.
Yeah. And I think it's like another one of those veils. Language is a veil. Depression is a veil. It's things that can take away and suck, but sometimes it's just a thing that just makes it harder for you to see your own context. Mm-hmm. And even when you pay attention to things and have fulfilling moments, the base context is really hard. Like, a fish can live and grow and be living in that extinctual thing, but he can never know the sea. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to communicate that, whether it be through language, whether it be through, you know, the nature of it. Is there's certain veils of that and veils of understanding and just meeting people where they are. And I think also just living, us that have conviction, living in our purposes too inspires and pushes.
Absolutely.
And is another part of that, because we can see certain angles of the veil that they can't see. And I think that's super important. And I think, you know, enrolling in therapy, going to church, doing volunteer work, listening to media around you that prompts you to remove veils and not do it in the sense of trying to have a sense of control, but more so piercing through a veil to realize the need to surrender control, the better.
And also, you know, to expound upon that, changing your environment, you know, who you're around, the things you do. Because, you know, if you're in some sort of state of lack of fulfillment, then the things you weren't doing before weren't working. And, you know, it's time to switch it up. But also, personally, just allowing people that space to exist and letting them know, regardless of who or what you are, I'm here and I accept you and I still have love for you. And then what was the second question?
How do you find or communicate ideology, or how do you communicate purpose in a world where everyone has a very different ideology?
Okay, so going back to linguistics thing, that's why I've been just sitting here watching you two, because you guys have been bouncing back and forth, but you've kind of been saying the same things.
It's just different. Like, it really is the same.
Absolutely.
Like, we're not really disagreeing. We're just very, it's like two heads of the same, like we're a part of the same jellyfish, and we're like two different tentacles able to sting and do the same operations.
Absolutely.
And we're just like, you know, tapping each other.
Yeah. No, but I used to have this conversation with my friend from college all the time, because I think it's important when it comes to language, sort of. I hesitate on using this term because it has a bad rep, but learning how to dumb something down.
Yeah.
It's like you have to learn that everybody doesn't speak that way. So learn how to communicate it on this level, but also communicate it on this level so that everybody understands it. Like when you started to, you know, analyze the word righteousness and the type of connotation and denotation that comes with it, that's important. So, you know, grasping a understanding of what you're saying and being able to communicate it on all different levels, I think is so important. That's why sometimes I'll come in and I'll reword something you're saying. It's not like I'm trying to correct you, but it's like, understand.
No, I completely agree. I think mixing highbrow and lowbrow and making it one thing is the most beautiful thing, because it should be for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You can speak to academics and have a beautiful conversation, and you speak to like this little 4-year-old and communicate the same thing and see the light in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was even telling them.
And you can speak to boxing crackheads.
You can speak to everyone. And I think that's also the nature of what you said before, like the gift of gab. Mm-hmm. It's the belief is that, you know, everyone deserves a chance to understand and deserves a chance and an equal shot. And the ability to see beauty from their own angle, and that every angle is beautiful. And this is just the acknowledgement of that, and just doing your best to make everyone feel that and make that everyone feel that like love and sense of that.
I agree. I think the ultimate goal is to show everyone how much you love them.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, life is just love.
It's all love.
It's all love.
I think that's the biggest purpose, but I look at the, like, we come from, we have a similar perspective, but I always bring it faith-based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where I can't love you unless God loves me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he shows me his love, so I can understand what love is, and then I can share it with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree. I think, you know, everything that we understand exists within a limit, but there's a thing of infinite limits and there's different infinities. I know in one of the episodes I was talking about, like, it's like theory that, like, you know, there's different levels or sizes of infinity. There's an infinity from countable numbers from zero to infinity, and then there's like uncountable infinities, like what's the infinity between zero and one? How many numbers exist between that? You can't. It's an infinite amount of numbers, and you don't know where to start. And same way with like communicating and things. That's just a veil of obscurity and abstraction that's really hard for us to comprehend mentally. But at the end of the day, you know, we're pulling from the same sources, so pulling from the same things.
But there's always an answer for that.
Yeah, there's always an answer. But I think sometimes people conflate their purpose with needing to find answers. But really, the answer is love, and you work from that answer and you find God.
I agree.
Yeah.
Ultimate, that's what it becomes. It becomes God.
Yeah. And what he means to you from your angle, and from his angle to your angle, and you know, if you're in his line of sight, he's in your line of sight.
Yeah, because he aligns everything for us.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
He said that was beautiful. And I know some people hear like the language that we're using and the nature of God, and there's different ways to reach that, the same beliefs and notions, and slowly embrace what we're saying without necessarily having to subscribe to an institution and grasp to the institution to give you meaning, because you're supplementing an institution with God. But no, it's just that is a tool, that is a stirrup, that is a saddle.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many ways you can ride the horse just as well with the saddle or without the saddle. It's just how do you respect the being on the path that you're trying to do? How do you get past the notion of tripping over righteousness?
Come on, Trent.
I'm so sorry.
No, you're good. I want to, because we're already at time. And of course, I didn't get to everything. But
we always have a part two.
Yeah, I always have a part two. So final question. What advice would you give to someone struggling with purpose, struggling to find purpose? Someone who feels lost. How would you help?
I will say, one, suicide is not the answer. I would say that choosing to be alive is the best decision that you can do for your everyday. And every day, whether you feel like you found a purpose or you didn't, you lived it.
I will quote it as this. The absence of hope is fear.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And when fear reigns, it embodies death.
Yeah.
Mm. That's interesting. No, I've heard that in different variations, but no, I love that. I love that.
I love it too.
I would say speak to people. Get out there. Like I said earlier, change your friend group. Go out and volunteer and see that no matter how bad you have it, other people out there have it bad too. And yet they persevere, they continue, they move forward. So it is possible to move forward from whatever state you're in. It is possible to find purpose. And a lot of times, you know, it takes work.
Yeah.
Like you said, when we're young, you know, when we're kids, that's kind of the purest form. And then as we move along, you know, we get corrupted by the world.
I know I have.
Yeah. But I don't necessarily, for me, I don't see it as like a corruption. I just feel like it gives you a greater definition.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, that kid that you were, like, there was a meme that I saw. Sorry for the tangent, but it was a meme that I saw, and it was like, you could return to the path, but there's no one there. And then, and it's like, it's a funny thing, but as you get older, you realize the nature of time and time passing. And the nature of what it means to exist in a context, and the fact that certain contexts will appear and move in and out to give you a kind of surface of where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think, you know, in that type of semblance of understanding, it goes back to not letting fear reign and just allowing yourself to feel the feelings of fear. And, you know, feeling that type of feeling, but don't let it control you. And even if you feel like it is controlling you or it is enabling certain decisions and whatnot, you can reach out. You can have others help you in that. And it's not a single-handed type of fight. And it's just everybody, all hands on deck type of thing.
Hmm.
I see how you dumbed it down for us and how we were speaking.
Yeah.
Because you gave a good definition of what your question was. So.
Yeah, no, because it's easy for people to get lost. And I see how y'all are like in y'all's zone. And so it's like, all right, let me speak to the simpletons out there.
I don't even think it's simpletons. I think it's just I never want to be a person that faults someone for not putting the same time into something as me.
No, absolutely. I didn't mean to call anybody simple. It's all about understanding. Everybody has a different level of understanding and learning. And you have to, especially when you're trying to teach, please, please, please get that. Yes. Not everybody learns the same way. So,
and you're not superior because you're a teacher.
Absolutely.
I feel that as a person that loves to teach, you are not superior because you are a teacher or a master of your subject. The real master is someone that is just equal footing with a student.
Mm-hmm. But yes, please have passion.
I taught you guys.
Absolutely. Have empathy because I got some childhood trauma with that. But that's another episode. But
there's so many bad. That's what I call a bad teacher. Yeah. A teacher
I'm
that feels
all
like
the
you're
episodes
super...
that you guys are gonna.
Yes, I feel like a bad teacher is someone that sees himself as superior and tries to put a hierarchy between himself and treats people as subjects. The only subject you are studying is life.
Yes, we all have things to learn. And with that said, shout outs, thank yous.
Thank you. I don't know if I introduced myself. I am Abraham Vargas, and thank you for the invite.
Yes, you're always invited.
It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. You have a beautiful light to your spirit. I just want to say that, and just so much love. Just thank you, Trent, for keeping me on time with this podcast. I love this podcast so much. Yeah, just thankful for this year, for being alive, and yeah, what that entails.
That I do agree.
Absolutely.
Thank God that I'm still alive.
Thank you, Abe, for coming. You were here on time, and I appreciate you for...
Oh, I thought I was late.
No.
I was a little late today.
It's okay. I mean, we always... That's why I always set it for the certain time, because I always allow for setup, for people to get here. But, it's better than being, an hour late. Like, oh, my God.
Never.
In 2 hours. Y'all ready to start the podcast?
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you for coming, Abe. I so much appreciate it. And
always welcome.
For anybody... listening, thank you. You've been a very purposeful, invisible audience.
Power. Niggas at the center, they gonna get it. Niggas at the center, they. Wait, let me show you what power is. Look into my mind, let me come and show you how I live. Look into my heart, let me go and show you all I can. Niggas at the same till they go and get it. Niggas at the same till they go and get it. Wait, let me show you what power is. Look into my mind, let me go and show you how I live.